Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Just look at the Super Bowl as an example. Milton Williams had 2 sacks. Josh Sweat, 2 sacks. Jalen Carter had 1.5. You know what I mean? They sacked Patrick Mahomes at will in that game. And one thing they've done so well the past 2 years leading into this one is get after the passer. Create those havoc plays. Tackles for loss, things like that. They're not doing that this year. They're not creating any havoc in the backfield. They're not getting after opposing quarterbacks. And until that changes, I have a lot of questions about how that defense is going to hold up and how the back end of their defense is going to hold up. And so far, it hadn't been that great. Just hasn't. But let's go ahead and grab a break on that note. Hour number two is on the way. David Cobb from CBS Sports. David Cobb is a college basketball and college football writer for CBS Sports on X at David W. Cobb. And role player here at 92.9 FM ESPN. Monday, Wednesday, Friday right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show. Thursdays with Jeffrey Wright and company. David, how's it going?
Hey, it's going well, man. Happy opening night.
Yes.
Can you believe it? Grizzlies.
I can.
Yeah, tonight. It's tonight.
Yeah. I don't even want to really ask you this, but expectations for this season, for this particular Grizzlies team. No Desmond Bain anymore. A lot of injuries that really going to hurt the depth. Get ready to learn PJ Hall and Jock Landale, brother. That's what you're going to have to learn. But what are your expectations for this season?
Oh, and Javon Small too. My expectations. I think it's actually a good thing, maybe that they're starting off low. We're starting off with low expectations for this season because you recently traded one of your three best players, a fringe all-star in Desmond Bane. You're entering the season with absolutely zero point guard depth, absolutely zero court depth or heft whatsoever. So to start with, it feels like the expectations are pretty minimal. My expectations are that they'll somehow find a way to survive and that we'll look up in mid to late December, be a little bit more healthy, and not be completely out of it at that point. I mean, that's my hope. And then maybe it can be a little bit different than last season, because last season started out pretty fun. It was fun for the first 40% or whatever. And then it ended up being very much not fun. I would much rather have it be the other way around. I would much rather the Grizzlies kind of go through it early, get some young guys some reps. Hey, that can help you out later on. And then find their rhythm late in the season. And so my hope is that they make the playoffs. My expectation, they're probably a play-in team, honestly, you know, somewhere in that 7 to 10 range.
Yep. Now, do you want to participate in the Take Olympics about the NBA back on NBC last night, and opening night, what that was? Rockets Thunder, really good game. Warriors got over top of the Lakers. What did you think of the broadcast and how NBC handled it?
Yeah, so I did. I watched a good bit, and I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the theme song. You know, I feel like that's half of what it's about is the music. You know, they had some kinks to work out. Like, you know, you're watching pregame and I guess it was Paul, whoever it was, didn't have a microphone there for a second. You know, they're working out the kinks in real time. It's, you know, it's as the great, what was his name at Fox News once said, you know, we'll do it live. When you're doing it live, you're working out the kinks, and that was clearly the case for them last night. But I love Mike Tirico. Mike Tirico, yes. To me, he could be calling anything, and it's amazing. And you know, I mean, quite honestly, he's one of the best to do it. And how long has it been since he's called a basketball game? I mean, it's probably been
2018 maybe before that, 2016, somewhere around there. Last time he called but that's where he started his career, NBA play-by-play guy. I thought he was phenomenal. And also, I know we have conversations about nepotism all the time, but Noah Eagle, that's good nepotism. He's really good.
Yeah, I think he's still kind of got to, like, settle into a groove and get into a rhythm and stuff. But,
okay,
you know,
all right.
Like every, and not like anybody was loving ESPN's NBA coverage last season. And, you know, I thought for a debut, it was pretty strong. It helped too that you got, did you see Chet kind of came out at halftime of the second game and did that halftime interview with them? I thought that was a good touch, a good get for them. It made me excited. I like having the NBA too on network TV, like right out of the gate. Like I think it's great. I mean, I know everybody's got their streaming, you know, whatever platforms now, but when you just think about the accessibility of the game in the past, it's always felt like, all right, you got Christmas Day. And then, you know, that's kind of it in terms of the marquee linear spots until the playoffs. And, you know, to have a marquee doubleheader on opening night on linear TV, I thought was a really good touch for the league.
I'm with you. Michael Jordan, what'd you think?
I missed it.
I thought it was going to be an every week thing that they brought him in for a sit down with Mike Tirico. It looks like they did some long form hour and a half to 2 hour interview that they're just going to pull excerpts from every week. So that was a bit of a letdown, but I think that people are just going to accept Michael Jordan in whatever form that takes, right? For the most part.
Well, it was always like when they announced like he was going to be a special contributor or whatever. I mean, you know, it was always kind of like, what does that mean? Nobody really understood exactly what that was going to look like. I don't know. I guess I missed it. So, and I didn't really see that many people talking about it. So I feel like in that sense of maybe it was a disappointment. Because, you know, you think if MJ is, you know, back in the game, so to speak, that would create a larger buzz. And I mean, to be quite honest, I've not seen much about that.
Yep. Moving on to something completely different, completely changing gears. Tony Vitello, the watch is over at Tennessee, your alma mater. He's off to San Fran. How do you think that's going to work out? This is really the first time we've seen a Major League Baseball team reach down into the college ranks and take a sitting manager to manage their ball club. I know he's a developer. I know he's done a hell of a job at Tennessee, but those are two completely different sports, it seems to me.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. I've got many doubts. Tony Vitello, an absolutely unbelievable college baseball coach. But yeah, there's no major American professional sport where the college game is more different from the professional game than baseball. And so the fur coats, the daddy hats, the motivational speeches, I mean, they were the touch that Tennessee baseball needed to rise from the dead, right? I mean, that sort of energy, the recruiting, I mean, that guy recruited at an otherworldly level. And I don't just mean getting the guys to sign. I mean, boots on the ground, the recruiting trips, the miles he logged in recruiting, I think were one of his strongest assets. I mean, when a lot of other college baseball coaches have families and wives, I mean, Tony Vitello was a single guy with no kids who was just, you know, just always, always on the recruiting trail. And that's so much of what his strength is as a coach that you go to the major leagues and it's, well, that's not a part of your job anymore at all. And then how does a major league clubhouse respond to his personality? Cause it's just different. It's a different personality. And so that's the big question. And I mean, you think about like just the energy. We're talking about now 162 game season. That's a little different than, you know, maybe playing 70 if you get to Omaha, right? So how do you sustain that over an 8 month period of time with zero professional experience? Are you going to have the respect of the guys in the clubhouse? Maybe it works, but I've got my doubts, man. I really do. I think it's an outside the box hire. Sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. At the end of the day, you don't blame the guy in the slightest for taking it. I mean, when you got a chance to do something historic and become the first ever college coach with no professional experience to go straight to Major League Baseball, then, I mean, I'm surprised it took him so long to decide. I would have thought he would have said yes to that right out of the gate.
If it works out, though, I could see Major League Baseball teams digging back into that route if it works out. If it doesn't, it may be the end of that already after one, but we'll have to see. All right, now I want to go to an Athletic article because we've been having the ongoing conversation about the Florida job and Lane Kiffin, if he would want to take that. Joe Rexroad for The Athletic wrote an interesting article about SEC jobs. He ranked them, every single one of them. And he put Florida at number 5 and then Ole Miss all the way down at number 12. what's your reaction when I just tell you that on the surface, that Florida is that highly thought of as compared to Ole Miss? I know the historical significance and everything like that. Florida has won a couple of national titles in the 21st century. Ole Miss, absolutely not. But is that too much of a gap, in your opinion, just looking at what...
No, I think...
Go ahead.
It's spot on, Gabe. It's spot on. There's no doubt. Florida is a better job than Ole Miss. I think he's got Florida in about the right range. In fact, I would bet there's probably some Florida fans that would argue it should be higher than five. And then, I mean, realistically, you could make the case for Ole Miss historically to be even a little bit lower than 12 in this 16-team conference. Now, I think he got it about right. I mean, I think I probably would have had him in about the same spot. Now, the thing is now, the curve is not as elongated, right? Like, the odds have flattened for everybody in this era, so it doesn't matter as much. The gap between the 12th best job in the SEC and the 5th best job in the SEC is not as significant right. as it used to be. And that 5th best job, your chances of winning a national title are not maybe as good as they were 10 years ago. And the chances of your 12th best team ever breaking through to get it, they actually exist. I genuinely believe that the right coach at the 12th best job could break through and at minimum reach a national championship game in college football. And so, I mean, I think that's the distinction. And then you think about, too, okay, if you're Lane Kiffin, yeah, you technically have the 12th best job in the SEC, but you have it operating as a top, certainly easily a top half of the SEC
yeah.
type of job, probably better than that. But then you look at Florida. Look at the issues at Florida, the things they've not been able to get squared away since Urban Meyer's departure. And, you know, it's not a no-brainer. I think Joe Rexroad hit the nail on the head with 5 and with 12. But I don't think that, you know, I don't think just looking at those rankings alone justify saying that, oh, yeah, well, Lane Kiffin's got to do this. I don't think it's that simple at all. I don't think that gap between 5 and 12 is near enough to justify just going to go. Not in this era.
I agree with every utterance. Now, what if I also told you Joe Rexroad's rankings put Vanderbilt ahead of Ole Miss at number 10?
Okay,
what would you say to that? would that change your opinion a bit?
Oh man, I love Joe. Joe actually had to get the Grizzlies job covering the Grizzlies for the Commercial Appeal back in the day because
right.
He was with Gannett at the time and had good connections with the hiring folks. And so Joe, if you're listening, I love you, but you're crazy. Vanderbilt is not the 10th best job in the SEC, and I'll say this to your face when I see you at the SEC basketball tournament in March. You're out of your mind. No, Vanderbilt is not the 10th best job in the SEC. It is probably the number 16 job in the SEC. But
the case yeah, he okay. made, though, if we're going through the case he made, he said you win 7 to 8 games regularly at Vanderbilt, you have more than enough security.
Yeah, that's true.
Right.
I mean, okay. If job security is like if something you're really, really valuing in this equation, then okay, I guess. But if I would have thought that places where you can win a national title might be a part of that picture too, in which case Vanderbilt is last.
Yes, yeah. So there's that. But do you think Lane Kiffin's actually going to give thought to going to Florida? Like, what? How do you think this ultimately goes? Is this going to be Jimmy Sexton just getting him to re-up at Ole Miss for a top three, you know, number? Or do you think, you know, Lane Kiffin to Florida is something you can envision going into the offseason?
Well, I'm telling you the truth, Gabe, when I say that I do think that part of that will be decided by how the rest of this season transpires.
Right.
I think this is a huge week for Ole Miss. I mean, just massive. They're going on the road to Oklahoma. I do not like the matchup. So last year, I thought Lane Kiffin did an amazing coaching job because he was able to keep the team focused and together and grinding towards their ultimate goals even after they lost to Kentucky. And it looked like they were dead to rights last season in mid-October, and then they beat Georgia. And then they really had a chance until they choked against Florida to make the college football playoffs. So my question is, if they lose at Oklahoma on Saturday, that's going to be their second straight loss. The margin for error is gone. Can they keep it on the rails and make the college football playoff? If they can, I think it becomes a lot harder for Lane Kiffin to go for a few reasons. One, you're coaching a team that's in the college football playoff. There's no easy way to make that break. In fact, you could be coaching into, you know, mid-January. You're not going to leave a team in all likelihood that's going through that. And then two, it kind of illustrates that you can break through and you do have a shot at Ole Miss in a way that we've never really thought of Ole Miss in this era before. However, if they lose at Oklahoma, it's an ugly loss and it lingers, and then they were to lose to South Carolina or Florida, then Ole Miss fans are getting a little restless, you know, then maybe it changes a little bit. At the end of the day, I still think I would be surprised if Lane Kiffin left Ole Miss for Florida because of all the sort of personal development, all the family ties that, you know, he has now developed there in Oxford. His son, as you probably saw, threw a game-winning touchdown pass for Oxford High against one of the Memphis area schools last week, I think. And so, you know, he's playing for David Cutcliffe's son in that program there. I mean, that's, you know, you don't want to uproot him and make him go have to learn a new system in Florida when he could be a high-caliber college prospect himself here in a couple of years. So there's a lot of factors like that I think would make it hard for Lane Kiffin to leave regardless. But especially if they make the college football playoff, which does appear quite likely, you know, I just can't see it.
Now, this college football season to me has been one of the most intriguing of my lifetime because obviously you have these schools that have these unbelievable starts that you're just not expecting. Indiana up there at number 2 in the country. Georgia Tech is number 7. Vanderbilt's a top 10 team. Virginia's a top 20 team. Like, it's so intriguing to see what the House Settlement NIL era has done to sort of shift the power to some of these schools as we continue down this road. And last week, I want to make this sort of a weekly discussion. We talked about teams we trust in college football. Teams that we trust, sort of in that national championship caliber. We had two listed last week that lost. Miami goes down on Friday night to Louisville. And then I didn't quite expect this, but Arizona State's just one of those schools under Kenny Dillingham that refuses to die. But Texas Tech goes down. They were in that conversation. So now that we go into week 9, who's in that group? Teams you trust to continue to win and put themselves in that national championship conversation?
Well, okay, so I will couch the Texas Tech thing by saying that if Baron Morton, their quarterback, had been healthy, I do think they would have won that game. So
sure.
I do that's going to factor in now to the way we view Texas Tech. If they don't win the Big 12 championship game, all right, that's going to be one of those situations where you got to evaluate how much do we dock them for that Arizona State loss because their quarterback was missing, right? So just put a pin in that for here in a few weeks when those first CFP rankings get released. But yeah, okay, so teams that I trust right now, I mean, it's Ohio State.
Trouble with that. I don't think you should have trouble with that. They're allowing 5.9 points per game, but I hear you.
Well, where I was struggling was trying to get to that next team, like Ohio State, and I'm running through the options in my mind because you think about it, like Alabama. Okay, I would trust them if they were playing in any other conference,
yeah.
But because I don't really trust anyone in the SEC. Texas A&M sitting here unbeaten, but they got to play, you know, a handful of really good teams here down the stretch. They are absolutely going to lose at least one game and probably two, if not more. And you know, Alabama and Georgia both operating at a very high level right now, but they both have major hurdles still to come. So if you're talking about teams that you really trust not to lose, I mean, that list for me right now, it's Ohio State and it's Indiana. And that's kind of about it.
Well, Alabama, what do they have to do? Like is there a mark? Is there a benchmark you can look at? They've won 6 straight, and they looked dominant last week against Tennessee, and they're really opportunistic on the defensive side of the ball. We could have questions about how sustainable that is, but offensively they just are what they are. Ryan Grubb and Kalen DeBoer are getting the most out of every single guy they have on their offense, and Ty Simpson has been phenomenal. But what more does Alabama have to do to bridge the gap to make them a trusted team? Is it simply not playing the SEC? Right?
Yeah, that's it. I mean, Yeah, go join the ACC, and I'll trust you. No, I mean, I think the one flaw. I mean, look, Alabama's playing at a really high level. I mean, I've had Ty Simpson now number one in my quarterback power rankings for 3 weeks straight. You mentioned it; it's the opportunistic defense, and that's a great trait to have. But I watch them, and they get gassed repeatedly in every game at various points. I mean, explosive plays are not hard to come by when you're playing against Alabama. But once you get into the red zone, they have a way of coming up with turnovers, coming up with big plays, coming up with those big short yardage stops. And that's fantastic. Most championship teams have that trait. But down to down, I don't think it's an elite defense. So that is a huge part of my hang up with Alabama. And I'll say this on Georgia real quick. I was going to ask you about Georgia.
Gunnar Stockton made it into your top 10 this week in your quarterback rankings.
Well, he was great.
They scored on every
possession in that Ole Miss game until it was time to steal the football. And their defense was shaky for the first three quarters, but down the stretch it was great. If I could see more greatness more often from that Georgia defense, then they could be a very, very trustworthy sort of team. I think they are benefiting now from the fact that they've got seven or eight guys who can play and play different spots on the offensive line, because they were sort of like the Grizzlies in terms of their offensive line going into the season. They were already banged up before the season had even started. Now they're reaping the benefits of the fact that, you know, some of these guys are coming back. Now they've kind of cross-trained at different positions on that offensive line, and I think that's helping them quite a lot. And that's one of those things that is easy to overlook or maybe not appreciate, but I do think that's a factor in why Georgia's looking a lot better here.
Final thing, I know that, like, he's top three shortest odds to win the Heisman. He's tracking to be in New York, no doubt. But Julian Sand at Ohio State, maybe that's part of just being in the Southeast and not really dealing with Big Ten football all that much. But Julian Sand, is he getting enough credit for what he's doing at Ohio State?
It's pretty impressive. Probably not, because since they played Texas, they haven't really played anyone of significance. And now it's like their Penn State game is no longer even significant because Penn State is so bad. So in that sense, Julian Sand is operating outside of the national spotlight, unlike a Ty Simpson, right, or a Diego Pavia, who
Fernando Mendoza too, I think, with that win over Oregon.
I mean, yeah, absolutely. No, he's probably not getting the credit that he deserves for a redshirt. What is he now? I guess he's a redshirt sophomore, so he's not a pup. No, he's a redshirt freshman. Because he was only at Alabama for a semester before he left after Saban retired. So yeah, for a redshirt freshman to be completing, I mean, gosh, he barely misses. I mean, it's in the mid-70s completion percentage for Julian Sand. Maybe,
yeah,
I think it's 80%.
He's 80% completion percentage, averaging 267 yards per game, 19 touchdowns to 3 interceptions.
Yeah, right. I mean, yeah. So it's actually, I think, worked to his benefit in terms of his Heisman odds that he's distributing the football to more than just Jeremiah Smith, because Carnell Tate's also having a huge year. And he hits their tight end, Max Clary. Yep. He hits him a lot too. So it's like, if you were just throwing to Jeremiah Smith, then I would think, you know, Jeremiah Smith would have better Heisman odds than Julian Sand. But Sand's been spectacular. He's better than Kyle McCord. He's better than Will Howard. He is the next great Ohio State quarterback. And, you know, if the nation understands that yet, I don't know. But Ohio State is absolutely tier 1A on an island of their own in the national championship conversation. And if he's the guy who leads them there, then, you know, he's going to get all the accolades that he deserves.
Yep, for sure. Well, David, I'll let you roll. Enjoy the Grizzlies game tonight.
Hey, man, you too.
Yes, sir. He is David Cobb, college basketball, college football for CBS Sports on X at David W. Cobb. Also, make sure you check him out Monday, Wednesday, Friday right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show, but Thursdays with Jeffrey Wright and company right here on 92.9 FM ESPN. College football's rolling right along. Week 9 is right on the way. It's already started, but you'll get the majority of it coming up on Saturday. And just as always in the South, we're always excited. We're always excited for every single kickoff. And there's no better place to catch all the college football action than Caesars Sportsbook inside Horseshoe Tunica. You're going to walk in to Caesars Sportsbook, and there's going to be 20 HD TVs. You're going to look at them, and you're going to place your bets. You're going to say, I don't see my game. You know what you do? You just get an attendant, and they will change whatever screen you want to the game of your choice so you can track that bet. But there's 20 HD TVs. You're going to be locked in. The seating in there, plush, beautiful, more comfortable than what you have in your living room. So that's why you need to get to Caesar Sportsbook Inside Horseshoe Tunica. It's the spot to feel every play, every score, and every win. You can place an order on their game day menu. They have the nachos and the wings and everything else, but you can get some gourmet food delivered to you from Flavortown right around the corner. Everybody likes a trip to Flavortown and Guy Fieri. Guy Fieri will bring you some food. How about it? Get that gourmet food from right around the corner. And you can order a beer that they will deliver to you as well, or a mixed drink. I don't want to discriminate. If you want to get something else, get something a little sweeter. But they have a full service sports betting experience, complete with in-game wagering, staff betting windows, 10 self-betting kiosks, so you're always going to be able to lock in the bet of your choice. It's the ultimate in college football viewing experiences. If you want to get into the games and get in on the action, you need to get into Caesar Sportsbook Inside Horseshoe Tunica. We will see you on Saturday. You must be 21 or older to gamble. No one to stop before you start. If you have a gambling problem, don't hesitate to reach out. It's 1-800-GAMBLER. Now we need to take a trip around the National Football League next. Let's do that thing we do right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show right here at about 5:30. Let's get to a trip around the National Football League. George, hit it. Darren Waller, who came back out of retirement after a two-year hiatus to join the Dolphins to play tight end for them after they traded Jonnu Smith to the Steelers this offseason, he's officially back on IR after three games. He's going to miss a minimum of four games, but I don't know if he'll get back on the field. Dolphins stink. They're 1-6. They're no good. But Darren Waller, can I apologize? Can I apologize to Darren Waller?
You can.
I was not fully familiar with your game after 2 years away from the game. Four touchdowns in three games that he played in.
I mean, how are you not familiar with his game?
I mean,
he had a whole rap career inside that those 2 years.
I was familiar with his game when he was with the Las Vegas Raiders and John Gruden. Then when you take 2 years
Giants
away,
and
then the Giants was ugly. Then 2 years away from the game, I didn't expect much from him. But his three games were pretty damn good. He ended up in those three games. I think he's the fourth leading receiver on the Miami Dolphins
so far this season.
That tells you the Dolphins stink. But yeah, Still, Darren Waller's going on to IR.
On the Dolphins, real quick, did you see what Tua had to say today?
I've given up on Tua. What did he say, George? Let me know.
I want to say, this is obviously not an exact quote. They asked him about not hitting Jalen Waddle on some of these deep shots, and his response had something to do with his height and not being able to see beyond offensive and defensive linemen at times.
Well, he's already making it. He's got his $53 million per year contract. He's good for life because he ain't a starting quarterback in this league no more. I can tell you that right now.
No.
I mean, the fact that his coach came out yesterday when asked about, okay, you're going to stick with Tua. What are your expectations? And all he could spit out, Mike McDaniel, that is, his head coach, was, my expectation is that we don't throw 10 picks. That usually doesn't say good things about the quarterback that you have out there.
I mean, so is he sticking with Tua, or is he stuck with Tua?
He's stuck with Tua.
There
he's not going to start Quinn Ewers.
Or Zach Wilson.
I forgot. Zach Wilson, he should start Zach Wilson because he's wearing number zero. That would be fun.
Ugh.
He is a number zero, right? I thought I saw that in the
preseason. If he's wearing number zero, look in the mirror, buddy.
Be real with yourself.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Actually wearing number zero? Oh my God, he is.
Yeah.
Dude.
So that would be fun. You know, it's like when I watch BYU now with Bear Bachmeyer wearing 47. It's electric no matter what he does.
I hate it. I can't
see. I can't get enough of it.
47?
I thought I'd hate it, and then I watched him play, and I'm like, he looks like a 47 at quarterback.
You're right. He does look like a fullback quarterback.
He plays like a 47 for sure. Like an H-back, Chris Cooley. Throw it back to Chris Cooley, baby. Come on.
You had to do this,
didn't
you?
No, I mean, yes, I did. It's topical. It's what we have to do.
Jeffrey's done this 2 days in a row now.
I'm sorry that you're a Jets fan. I'm sorry.
So am I.
I saw a kid over the weekend. They interviewed him.
I loved that clip, by the way.
Can we pull that clip up? Can you, by chance, figure out a way to pull that clip up? But the news about the Jets is that Justin Fields is supposed to be going to the bench, and Tyrod Taylor is supposed to replace him. But Tyrod Taylor now has a knee injury that's going
to
have him day-to-day. And Aaron Glenn, what did you think about it? I mean, it's gamesmanship from Aaron Glenn. Will not announce who he's going to start this weekend, even though he said to the media, the Assembly media today, he knows. He absolutely knows. So what do you think? Just gamesmanship, you're fine with it?
Yeah, it's just gamesmanship. I'm fine with it. It doesn't really bother me.
Yeah.
I found the clip, by the way.
Yeah, please play the clip. This is a child, a poor child who was born into being a Jets fan. Shout out to George Ruggiero.
I don't think it. No one actually knows how many times I have said pretty much those
the exact same things.
Yeah, I'm just like, the only thing that would be worse than not rooting for this team is if I bandwagoned off and joined another team. Can't do it.
Would that really be worse?
For me, I think so, yeah.
Okay, all right. You stick to your guns.
Have to.
Even when you have a pea shooter. I mean, it's worse than that, really. You have a musket. You have an old-school musket, brother. You don't know where that bullet's going. Let's get to the next one. Jaden Daniels is out going into Monday night against the Chiefs.
Yep.
And Commanders just don't look good so far this year. And dare I say it, sophomore slump? I don't know if we're fully – we're not at C.J. Stroud-level sophomore slump.
Well, they also – the Texans did him so dirty. They gutted that offensive
line. I'm with you, and I still will uphold the good name of one C.J. Stroud.
I think it's unfair for him.
But are we – it's not C.J. Stroud level, but we can call this a sophomore slump from Jaden Daniels, right?
Kind of. I'm torn on it because of all the injuries that he's been dealing with. I mean,
here's my problem.
Yeah.
Why I'm there.
Is he just taking too many hits?
Cliff Kingsbury.
Yeah.
We saw this at Texas Tech.
Yep.
We saw it with the Arizona Cardinals. And I feel like we're seeing it again, where he can start a season really good, implement some decent things, have an offense humming. But once you get into the later part of the year, get into year two, it's a struggle. When he was at Texas Tech, how many times did we watch his team start off 4-5-0, 6-1, and then end up 7-5 or 6-6?
Oh,
I mean,
all
the time. That's where I'm at with this whole saga. I think Jaden Daniels is a great quarterback. I think he is a very, very talented guy who has a bright future. But I've seen this Cliff Kingsbury thing fall off a cliff too often, and it scares me. It scares me. But they have had injuries.
Yeah,
and there are some excuses that you can make for what's around him.
Yeah, and even beyond the injuries to Daniels himself, I mean, how many games are we actually going to get out of the entire group of receivers that's supposed to be he's supposed to be throwing to?
Right. I'm with you. You know. I'm with you. Speaking of injuries, they're injured beyond recognition. Bucky Irving and Chris Godwin already ruled out. Mike Evans just got surgery on his collarbone. He's ruled out for at least 8 weeks.
He already hit IR.
Yeah, and it's sad for me with Mike Evans. I mentioned this yesterday, but he's caught for 1,000 yards in every year of his career. This year he won't. And usually that's just a sign of it's almost over, brother. Is he a first ballot guy? Do you think? I mean, he's a Hall of Famer. I think he's a Hall of Famer eventually, but we know that there's that crazy logjam at the wide receiver position that we've been dealing with for years. It took forever for Torrey Holt to break through, which is crazy to me, having watched him growing up. Hines Ward took forever.
He is
and honestly, 32. In the modern day NFL, like since we've sort of been in this modern era, there's so many wide receivers that are just going to be waiting for a long time. I wonder if Mike Evans will be one of them.
He might end up being one of
those
guys.
But he's got the Super Bowl.
He
so
does
that's
have
nice.
The ring. He's 32 right now, so even off coming off the broken collarbone, that's not to say he'll be completely, you know, ineffective the rest of his career. He's in a similar boat, weirdly enough, to Matt Stafford. Think about it. All of his like
does he
records,
have more? But doesn't he have more accolades at the wide receiver position, or was he always on the outside looking in at the All Pros and the Pro Bowls?
He's
and stuff
been
like
one
that.
Of those guys that's kind of been on the out because he's never been the super dominant
guy. But just the picture of consistency.
All of his NFL records are the same ones as Stafford's: youngest to get to however many yards, most consecutive seasons of a ton of yards. All of those are his. Oh, and then he has pretty much every Buccaneers franchise record. Because,
and then you threw in the ring at the tail end in a good situation that he was finally in. So I would put both of them in eventually. I don't think they're no doubt first ballot guys, but I think eventually you just sort of have to give them the nod.
Here we go. Evans, only a 6-time Pro Bowler and second team All Pro in 16 and 23. That's it.
A lot of wide receiver talent in this day. It's hard to break through. Lamar Jackson is back at practice, although he's in a limited capacity. But I did want to take this time to get back into the AFC North odds, because the AFC North is in such a weird spot. The team that's leading it and seemingly running away with it right now, Pittsburgh Steelers, they're old as dirt, okay? And Aaron Rodgers is playing well, but that's an old, old football team that we don't know if they're going to be able to stay healthy through the long haul. And are they really that good, or is this just early season, everything meshing together? They haven't met the hard times that inevitably you meet throughout an NFL season. But the Ravens sit there at 1-5. They're still second shortest odds to win the AFC North at +150, and the Steelers are only +135 to win. But they're 1-5 coming out of this bye week. Lamar Jackson is at least back in a limited capacity. Like, I still think it's the Steelers' division to lose,
yeah.
Okay? But there is a path forward for the Ravens after this bye week. You have the Bears. That's a winnable football game if Lamar Jackson's on the field. You have the Dolphins. Please, if Lamar Jackson's on the field and you lose that game, you're done. You're done. Then Vikings on the road. Crazy things, but Lamar Jackson makes things possible. Browns, and then Jets, and then Bengals. Then you'll have the Steelers, Bengals, Patriots is probably a loss. Packers probably lost. Then you end this year with the Steelers. But these next five or six games, Bears, Dolphins, Vikings, Browns, Jets, Bengals, they could get back to .500 and exceed if they – but the problem is with the Ravens right now, your margin for error is – like, it's hard to even put it at zero. Like, this is the NFL we're talking about. It feels like you're going to lose one of these games. Winning six straight games in the National Football League, with how bad your team's been so far, it's so hard to do. But they have no margin for error. But it's possible. It's not plausible. It's not something I would bet on.
No.
But it is possible that they could get back on the right track with Bears, Dolphins, Vikings, Browns, Jets, Bengals. That's not a tough stretch of schedule at all.
No, the path is there. The path is you just have to – this sounds crazy. You have to win out, and it's not even as much the offense. That defense is still
– it's so bad.
And it's talented and bad, and I don't understand it. That's the biggest thing.
I'm so disappointed with their secondary. I'm with you. I don't get it. I know Kyle Hamilton's been injured now, but you came into the season. Kyle Hamilton, first round pick Malachi Starks, Jaire Alexander, and Marlon Humphrey. If I look at that on paper, I'm saying that's a top five to seven group in the NFL.
Yeah.
And they've spent most of their time at 31st or 32nd in pass yards allowed per game.
It's insane.
It's wild. But that will do it for a trip around the National Football League. We'll come back, get to small talk to wrap up hour number two.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Do next. And Small Talk is brought to you by Conway Services, reputable service available 7 days a week. I do want to thank just the nature of college football and the bizarre nature of college football and the insanity of college football for the story we're going to talk about today. But we have war on tortillas, George. War on tortillas at Texas Tech and in the Big 12.
No mission, no La Banderita, nothing.
Nothing. Can't bring them in. But going into the season, there were some questions about will Texas Tech and the student section continue to be able to do their tortilla toss. I don't know when they do it. I don't know if it's first touchdown or if it's after the kickoff. But a lot of tortillas get thrown, and they have people on the sidelines ready to pick them up and dispose of them. But the tortilla toss has been going on for some time now. But the Big 12 voted 15-1 before the season to issue 15-yard penalties to Texas Tech for a third instance of throwing tortillas onto the field, Also, there's $100,000 fines that Texas Tech may have to pay from throwing on these tortillas. Now, before the season, Kirby Hocutt, the Texas Tech AD, when this was all passed and the measure was passed, he said, the rules can change, but our tradition will not. He was trying to stand firm with his students, with his institution, and I respect that. But they lose to Arizona State. They have some issues with certain, you know, fines from tortillas being tossed onto the field. And as of this week, Kirby Hocutt talked to the assembled media and said, the stakes are too high. We need to help, not risk penalizing our team again for throwing tortillas. So we wave goodbye to tortillas at Texas Tech. And from what I understand, Kirby Hocutt went on to talk with the media about how he's going to police this. And if students or fans bring in tortillas, they will be escorted out of the stadium. I just want to say one thing. I find this very Bush League of the Big 12 to do to Texas Tech now. Texas Tech has been struggling for a long time to be competitive. They finally spend a bunch of money on their roster. They start the season 6-0. They get themselves into a top 15 ranking. And as soon as all this happens and you see Texas Tech is going to be good, the Big 12 finds a way to penalize them for a tradition that they've held for the better part of the last 25 to 30 years. I find that ridiculous. But this story in itself, I don't know how serious I'm taking it.
It's an absolute shame. This very well could have been, if more of this news came out, the college football moment of the week.
Yes, yes. But tortillas. War on tortillas. Tortillagate.
R.I.P.
Sucks. Absolutely sucks. Now, we have a half hour left in the show before we pass you off to Grizzlies opening night versus Pelicans. We'll spend it wisely. Colton Denning is next.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.